Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Monday, May 6th. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, the 2024 legislative session comes to an end. Plans are already underway for next year. Then we speak with Mississippi's leading doctor about the most pressing issues the state is currently facing. And a new documentary looks at efforts to preserve oral histories of the Mississippi Delta. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Friday marked the end of the 2024 Mississippi legislative session. Medicaid expansion didn't pass this year, but other items that have been at the top of the agenda did. Like public school funding. Republican House Speaker Jason White reflects on these past 4 months with our Will Stribling.
Our two major policy focus, if you will, for this session was health care reform and education funding formula reform. We thought if we could look really hard at the formula and come up with a new way to fund students rather than systems, if we could get that across the finish line, we want to move on to the accountability feature of our K-12 education in Mississippi. And so next year, you'll see a big focus. Now that we got the funding piece behind us, we're funding students and not systems. We want to look at specifically accountability measures for our public schools. We have made tremendous strides over, you know, and we were called lots of bad names with third grade reading gate and some accountability that we put in place in some other areas regarding K-12 public education. Right. But those things worked. And the numbers don't lie on that. And, you know, for folks in other far-reaching states to write articles about the Mississippi miracle and how can we copy what Mississippi did, I think is a reflection of where the state has gone in public education under Republican leadership. And so we want to build on that. We don't want to do anything to tear that down. We want to build on it. And I think the next piece for us as far as public education is to look at the accountability model and how we're measuring schools and their performance. We think there's a way to really look at that, and let's drill down on that a little bit.
This is your 13th session overall, but first as speaker.
Yep.
So how did it meet your expectations, and where did it diverge?
We're positive about where we are. One of our major initiatives was that education funding formula that we talked about. We were able to get that across the finish line. We were able to achieve some reform with our public employees retirement system. I would say the work there is not done as we move forward. So we will continue to look at that to be sure that we are preserving that system, that it is sustainable and viable going forward. And then the healthcare piece, we looked at it. So I say we were able to move the needle in all those areas in a way that I think we would look back on the session as a success. I will tell you, I underestimated the time management component for myself and helping members accomplish their goals while also looking at the big picture, while also dealing with the Senate and the governor's office and all the other things that come with the office. So I have a new appreciation for the job, and especially for the job that Speaker Gunn did over the last 12 years, because he pulled it off fairly effortlessly, or at least that's the way it looked. And I found out it's real work. But it was rewarding, and I enjoyed it very much.
And that y'all made a lot of big swings this session. Two other issues, you've discussed Medicaid at length, but two others that didn't make it across the finish line were felony suffrage and ballot initiative.
Right.
Do you, are those still priorities for y'all?
They didn't get across the finish line, but I am proud for the House position on both of those issues. We were able to pass meaningful legislation on both of those issues. We were able to pass a restoration of suffrage bill for the first time in a long time. Now, the Senate did not take it up, wouldn't pass it. But we think we've you know, put a stake in the ground that we're willing to go there. We talk about second chances. We talk about reform. We talk about working on our recidivism rate in Mississippi for our incarcerated as they come out of jail. What are we doing with them? Statistics now, about half of our inmates are back in state custody within 18 months. We need to do better there. And we thought some reform in the restoring of suffrage rights for people was one way we could start moving that along and show that we are willing to give second chances and wipe slates clean so that folks can move on with their lives, move up on the economic ladder and jobs and things like that. And we've had other reforms in the last few years about driver's license and some reinstating those kind of things. And so that was a focus piece as we look at more criminal justice reform in the future. That was a piece of that. And the ballot initiative process. We passed a bill again this year. We, you know, and folks will say, we all in the Senate can't get on the same page about it. I would just remind you, we've passed a bill, I think, for 3 years in a row now, in an effort to find a compromise stance, if you will, with the Senate. We even raised the signature threshold this year in an effort to compromise with the Senate. We were unable to find any traction on the other end. So we'll continue. I think you'll continue to see members drop those bills and work on them in the next and coming sessions.
How do you think that the House has operated differently this year than in past years?
I don't know. It may be because, for one thing, we have a large freshman class. They don't come here with, you know, grinding any axes or any, you know, old scores to settle with lawmakers. So they have an open mind. They're younger. They're more, you know, aware.
Valuable.
Yeah. There you go. But when you take that, and maybe it's just a product of where I come from. I live in a county that is, you know, very rural, sparsely populated. It's overwhelming African-American population. I live amongst Democrats who are very proud of it, and they know my stance as a Republican and where I am. Maybe it's more of our generation and our willingness, you know, to consider other ideas. A guy or girl who won't listen to another idea is not defending their own position very well. I'm willing to hear the other side and hear their arguments, and where we can find common ground, we want to find it. And most folks in this chamber are conservative in nature, even the Democrats. Now, we may differ on a few social issues, but for the most part, the communities they come from are conservative communities. And so with that in mind, if they're willing to go with their convictions on most things, we can find some common ground. And I think you saw that in the session, in the issues that we tackled and in the things that we were able to accomplish, you know, from a House priority stance.
That's Republican House Speaker Jason White speaking with our Will Stribling about this year's legislative session. This was the first year Mississippi's Republican majority in the legislature earnestly pushed to expand Medicaid to the working poor, but disagreements in the last week of the session led to the bill dying. Lieutenant Governor Delbert Hoseman, a Republican, says his chamber wasn't willing to vote on the House's plan for expansion. He thinks the Senate had a plan that would have been a good starting point.
We had it with a supermajority ready to go 1-99. So had we all been working together, we'd have taken that. And then let's go talk about 38 and above. Let's go talk about the next step. How can we maybe do that? So instead of doing a step implement where we took what we had immediately standing in front of us, go ahead and take that off the table. That was 74,000 people. 74,000 people we could have gotten, we had in our hand. And instead, we got into some kind of proposal back and forth where some people are in the Democrat Party said they wouldn't vote for it. That made it very difficult down here, and it just gradually wilted away. Now, that being said, it's spring. We're going to pour more water on it. We're coming back next year.
Bulk leaders say they will revisit Medicaid in the 2025 session. Coming up, we speak with Mississippi's leading doctor about the most pressing issues the state is facing. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
do you look forward to Mondays? You do if you listen to MPB. Deep South Dining is food and Southern culture. Now You're Talking with Marshall Ramsey is compelling stories with interesting people. Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit gives you suggestions to better your life. The phone lines open up at 9 a.m. for you to talk to our experts on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, Larry Morrissey with the Mississippi Arts Commission. Please join me and my colleagues for the Mississippi Arts Hour, where we have in-depth conversations with different creative Mississippians. That's the Mississippi Arts Hour, Sundays at 5 on Think Radio, or download it as a podcast.
What can you do with the MPB Radio app? Listen live, hear local news, view the schedule, make a contribution, listen to shows on demand, and interact with social media. Get the app for your smartphone now.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. The Mississippi Department of Health is working with doctors and healthcare providers to discuss what could be done to help make a healthier state. Speaking at the second annual Healthy Aging Summit last week, State Health Officer Dr. Dan Edney talked about Mississippi's health status scorecard. Speaking with our Mike McEwen, he says one of the most important things lawmakers can do to help public health right now is expand Medicaid, but that's probably not going to happen until next January.
I have never, tried to push, one form or another, but basically to push the fact that we have to do something. We have more Mississippians dying unnecessarily at too young of an age every year than every other state. And we did it in education. It's very obvious. We went from 50th to now we're in the 30s, moving into the 20s. My goodness, if we could move from last place by a mile in health just to be 45th, what that would mean. And to real Mississippians who are struggling every day to have access to care, who are working and contributing to society. I liked a lot about what wound up in front of both chambers. Some things I didn't like, but I mean, that's what it's all about, is compromise. Mm-hmm. I tell you, I was very impressed with the Senate's version of the work requirement exemptions and exceptions. And I think that when I looked at the numbers, that would have wound up covering 95% of the expansion population. I don't think any other state's covering it, any higher than that. So, all the things that are being debated are worthy of debate. I just would like to see folks willing to change their minds on things as I did, because I was with the majority of physicians 10 years ago opposed to it because we didn't know what it meant or how much it was going to cost or what it was going to do to healthcare in Mississippi. And now we know. Mm. We have all the evidence we need from the experience of other states. Mm. And I talked to Republican legislators in other southeastern states. I talked to other state health officers in both expansion and non-expansion states. And the information is there if we choose to take advantage of it. So I'm encouraged. We clearly make progress on the issue of access to care for Mississippians. We help the hospitals an awful lot. We've got to help the EMS system. We've made some progress there. Big wins this session for emergency medical services. We have more work to do.
On the topic of seeing more funding for public health issues or population health issues, in previous stories I've done, I've interviewed Dr. Thomas Dobbs about, the increase in syphilis, specifically in newborns in the state. Mm. There's been a lack of funding for a number of years for population health issues. So what do you think caused that to change this session for lawmakers to say, hey, maybe we need to direct more funds to this?
Well, it was a change of approach for funding requests, for one. And, where we are with specifically syphilis, I'm grateful it didn't happen with TB, mm-hmm. but TB work goes on outside of the health departments largely. A big part of our syphilis work goes on within the health departments. And in 2017, when we had the serious state-level budget cuts, That severely impacted our ability to do our syphilis work. And then with the pandemic closing the county health departments for too long, that impacted it even more. And so two things have come out of that. Number one, we can't close them like that again. Mm. We can't. We had to have a better plan on how to respond to catastrophic events like Katrina, where we had to shift our workforce to the coast, and the pandemic, which it won't be our last, but we had to have the ability to continue our core work and respond to the world-class crisis that happens. And we're in the works of doing that. And then understand the reality of things, that we are never going back to state-level funding of 2010 in terms of per capita. Mm. So it's important to understand that we are one of the lowest state-level funded health departments in the country. We are dead last in the Southeast. And we're right there competing for dead last nationally. That we are currently investing around 1850 per person per year for public health in Mississippi. Alabama approaches $50. Mm. Louisiana is in the 40s. Arkansas is right at 40. Tennessee invests $69 per person per year. And it's very important to me that everybody understand that, number one, you get what you pay for. And right now we're paying, we're getting high syphilis rates that are spilling over into babies because of our investment levels. And then number two, you invest in what you care about. Mm-hmm. And that's true for anybody. That's true for any organization, any entity. I can tell what you care about by looking at your finances, mm-hmm. and seeing where your discretionary money goes. So I understand the reality that there's no appetite for increasing agency funding pretty much anywhere in state government. And I have opportunities through our own funding resources, through clinical operations and our fees, and we're working hard to strengthen those areas and then reorganize community-level public health in a sustainable fashion.
That's State Health Officer Dr. Dan Edney in part two of our conversation.
I've been practicing medicine for 33 years, and this is the most challenging thing that I've had to do.
That's tomorrow. Ahead, a new documentary looks at efforts to preserve the oral histories of the Mississippi Delta. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, host of the original Southern Remedy, the show where I answer your medical questions. Subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on any podcasting app.
Do you look forward to Mondays? You do if you listen to MPB. Deep South Dining is food and Southern culture. Now You're Talking with Marshall Ramsey is compelling stories with interesting people. Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit gives you suggestions to better your life. The phone lines open up at 9 a.m. for you to talk to our experts on MPB Think Radio.
MPB Think Radio airs local programs every weekday morning at 9. It's your chance to learn about Southern cooking, home improvement projects, and more. MPB Think Radio, Mississippi is our mission.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Many oral histories can be forgotten through time, but a new documentary is giving them a greater voice. From Greenville, Mississippi, the Washington County Oral History Program preserves those stories now being shared with the world. Field Humphrey is director and producer of It's in the Voices. It's available now through PBS and airing as part of the Real South TV series. He says this film could be a way to engage communities throughout Mississippi and the nation to begin researching their own towns to find other hidden stories.
It's a short documentary about a oral history program that was conducted back in Greenville, Mississippi in the late 70s. The man who conducted the first interview and one of the sole living interviewers of the project, his name is Clint Bagley, and he revisits the first interview from the program, an interview he did with a retired school teacher named Daisy Green back in 1976.
What was the point of that interview?
The point of the interview, Clint was a college student up in Memphis, and he was visiting his sick mother, but at the time he was working for the Mississippi Department of Archives and History. And he had conducted some projects before. I don't think there was really a point other than just documenting Daisy Green's life and story. He had heard a lot about Daisy Green. Her family was very prominent in the area, a very prominent Black family. Her father was one of the first Black physicians in the Delta. And she's just a very impressive woman. And so people in a circle were telling him that he needed to talk and interview Daisy, and he ended up having issues with her. They became fast friends until her death in 1982, I believe. And the interviews went so well that the Mississippi Department of Archives and History requested a full-fledged project out in Greenville. And what was fascinating is they let Daisy Green and another retired school teacher, Roberta Miller, run the program. So two Greenville women, retired school teachers, were allowed to head off this project and document their community's history.
How did you find out about it?
I spend a good amount of time in the Greenville area. My in-laws have a hunting camp up there, and I just really grew to love the Delta and wanted to tell a story out there. And I was just kind of meeting nonprofits, meeting individuals, going to libraries, going to archives in the area, looking for a story to tell. And it was becoming apparent that a lot of the libraries in the area, you know, for a number of reasons, wasn't really presenting a well-rounded history of these communities. That was becoming very apparent for each archive and library I went to. And then just I ended up going to the Greenville Library and stumbled upon the Oral History Project, which is very well preserved, very well indexed. It's actually a very impressive project. And I was just fascinated by the scale of the project, the organization of the project, and just how candid a lot of the interviews were. A lot of times you get overly edited, kind of sanitized history, and this was not the case with the Washington County Oral History Program. People were allowed to speak their minds, be very frank about their experiences, and it was just, yeah, it was very fascinating, and right away I knew that this was the story I wanted to tell.
Did you interview Clinton Bagley about his interview? How did you do this?
So I wanted to focus on the people who actually conducted the interviews, and, you know, I was able to connect with an old retired director of the library, and we interviewed her, Kay Clanton, and she's in the film very briefly. But then she introduced me to Clint over the phone. He was out in Jackson, and I ended up talking to Clint, and we hit it off. And the next day I drove to Jackson, met him at the archives, and then did a quick interview. And, yeah, we discussed how the program came about, the impact of the program. He's still, to this day, has a lot of love and respect for Daisy Green, admiration for the work that they did. Yeah, I think the goal was to have him revisit that first interview because he felt so strongly about that first interview with Daisy and its connection to Daisy. And during the first interview she had with Clint about her experience through the 1927 flood and how it was very different for Black people than white folks. But she rose above it. Education was a huge priority for her. She passed that on to her students when she was teaching in Greenville, really pushed the importance of education and community. And hopefully that comes through in this film because, you know, as you may know today, Greenville is still dealing with a lot of issues with the education system, namely with folks heading out to Cleveland and taking a lot of the tax revenue for these school systems.
Well, I appreciate you speaking with us
Field Humphrey, producer of a short film called It's in the Voices.
Yeah, I really appreciate the time.
This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.